Welcome, well-read listeners, to episode 71 of the Nerdstravaganza podcast, where all novels are delivered in audiobook format. I'm Tom.
I'm Rick.
I'm Brian.
And tonight we will be discussing literature as it pertains to our nerdy, geeky lifestyles. But before we dive into tonight's wordy topic, let's give you a little peek into our nerdy, geeky lifestyles by letting you know what we've been up to in the past week with our usual Geekly Weekly, Weekly Geekly Roundup. Brian, why don't you go first? What have you been up to, sir?
I did nothing but Star Wars this week. I think I mentioned it before, but I finally got around to like reading it and immersing myself in it. The Star Wars comic book is finally out. That's the comic book adapted from the original screenplay that Lucas pitched.
Yes.
Very cool. There's just something about like this other part of Star Wars that I've never seen before that really turns me on. I love all the differences. And I love seeing where things that I know in their final form came from. Very cool.
Cool. I also picked that up, just FYI, based on your recommendation. I haven't read it yet, so I will report back on it once I have.
Were they selling low, or they have plenty?
They had replenished their stock after having sold out.
Wow, excellent.
Yeah.
And the only other big news I have is the Star Wars X-Wing Miniature Wave 3 ships are out. And I got to pre-purchase three of them, but the fourth was already sold out. Of course, when I showed up to pick them up, they had the fourth one in stock. So I got the entire run.
Nice.
Really happy about that.
What kid hasn't dreamed of transmitting shield codes from the Imperial shuttle? I mean, let's be honest.
This whole wave just feels so exciting to me. It's so much more than just like blow shit up. They're all about intelligence experts on board and trading. Someone's ability is you can take two damage, but you do one damage automatically. So that's just a great way to just finish someone off if you have someone like lingering that you can't just get down. It's killer. I love it. I love how it's expanding. And the ships look so fucking cool. I've never heard of the Rusty Crow before or whatever. I know it was some video game ship. The ship looks amazing. It's really cool. I'm a fan now.
Cool. That is a very Star Wars-y week. Anything else, sir?
That's it.
All right. How about you, Ricky?
I also got my Star Wars Wave 3 ships, although not in hand. I pre-ordered them, like, I don't know, 5 months ago. And finally they shipped, but the weather was so horrible today after work, I couldn't make the drive to Hollywood to pick them up. But I will be grabbing them soon. I checked out some of the Gen Con posts from a couple video posts from guys that I follow, and they did a quick overview of like all the included cards and stuff, and Brian is dead on 100% correct with they are really upping the strategy level in this game. It's not just a dogfighty blow shit up. Like, you can really get some cool tactical maneuvers in and stuff. It's going to be exciting to play with these new ships. And just from what I've seen from pictures and videos of the ships, look fucking amazing. I can't wait to get mine in my hands.
Something about a B-Wing, dude. I've never been a huge fan of them. The B-Wing is fucking cool. I can't say it any other way. It's just so badass to have that.
Yes. You know, I was, even after purchasing it, I was sketchy, but then I saw it, like, they unboxed it, set it up on the stand, and I was like, oh dude, it's awesome. I can't wait to get it. And then in video game news, I've been all over this Disney Infinity. So it got me interested in some of the other Disney games I've had laying around. So I think last week we talked about, I played the Illusions, a Castle. What is it, Tom? The Castles of Illusions?
Mickey's Castle of Illusion is, I believe, the title. Yeah.
Yeah, the remake of that. I purchased it, but I haven't got to play any further than the demo. But I did crank up the Disney Epic Mickey Power of Illusions for my 3DS.
Ah.
And for a demo, dude, it might as well be half the game. I mean, I couldn't believe how long it was, number one. Number two, looks pretty cool. Number three, I think the use of the paintbrush is a bit gratuitous.
Really?
kind of unnecessary. Like, you have stuff that pops up on the bottom screen that you click on it, and then you can either trace it to make it appear, or you click on something that already exists and you trace it to make it disappear. But it's only very select things, and it basically tells you exactly what it is and chooses paint or turpentine automatically while you select it. So the top you have your platformer game screen, the bottom you have basically what looks to be like a map, and you'll come across elements on the map that are colored differently, that are basically like, hey, you can click here to either make this appear or make it disappear. And then you get rated on how well you trace it or erase it. I don't know, it just seems kind of like they could have done without that part, and it would be a pretty cool game. But I haven't made up my mind yet. If I see it used for $10, I'll buy it. But for 20 or 30 new, two Rick thumbs down.
Just not happening, huh?
Yeah, just not happening. But for $10, I'll play the shit out of it. And it was weird. I got to admit, even though the drawing was a little, like the tracing part, seems a bit like, oh, well, the rest of the Epic Mickey games rely on this kind of turpentine and paint thing. We got to figure out how to include this here. It does seem forced in. I found myself getting a little addicted to trying to get a perfect trace or a perfect erase every time. It got to a point where that's all I cared about doing. So I don't know. And then, what else have I been playing? Nothing. That's it. That's all I've been up to. Went to Disney World, saw some villains, saw a guy basically stop a bus, and we got stuck for 3 hours while he got escorted off the bus. Crazy times at Disney World. Used to be the happiest place on Earth. Now it's just the hottest place on Earth. I'm done.
Great conclusion, sir. It sounds like you had a pretty cool Disney-filled week.
That I did.
And I guess that means it's my turn. On the video game front, I finished Mass Effect 2. I know I was close to that last time I reported on it, and so that is done. I've just got to play the third one, and then the Mass Effect trilogy, my summer reading assignment, if video games can be likened to reading, will therefore be complete. Also, a little more Battlefield 3, mainly because I want to be like all good at Battlefield before Battlefield 4 comes out. And finally popped the Animal Crossing out of my 3DS and popped in Luigi's Mansion Dark Moon, a great game that I wish I had played much sooner.
That's going to be my Halloween treat.
It's very, yeah, very Halloween appropriate. So if that's going to be, if you're going to trick or treat, get that dropped into your little pumpkin or whatever that you carry with you, it's totally worth it. It's worth dressing up. Great nice. Game. After having had a great time with my first Final Fantasy XIV session, I've been thinking a lot about playing Final Fantasy XIV again. But it's like when you've got a couple of hours at the end of the workday, you don't really want to dive into an MMO and then be up for like 9 hours. So I will be playing that again soon and reporting on it, but I'm still looking forward to playing that again. Oh, and big news, I've also booked travel to Disneyland on the West Coast. So when I eventually make my way back to Florida, it will be by way of the Disneyland theme park, which I've never been to. I've been to Disney World, our East Coast equivalent, but never the land. So I'm looking forward to that.
Big difference.
So I hear. I hear it's a lot. The scale of it is much less, but I shall see. And as that time nears, I will report on how enthusiastic I am and then maybe give my impressions after I've compared both parks. But apart from that, nothing. I have not done any reading this week, which is a real shame because this week's episode, as we know, is all about literature and reading and how it fits into our lives, etc. And so without further ado, let's dive into that topic. I say it fits into our lives, but thinking back over the course of my life as a nerd, it has been kind of part and parcel, going all the, you know, both in the academic setting and in the leisure time setting when it comes to either just reading books for pleasure or reading through many a tome on role-playing back when I was an RPG kid. And I guess to start things off, we should discuss how reading sort of has fit into our lives and how essential you think it is to being sort of geeky guys like us.
I always felt that I in particular had a deeper connection to books and reading. As some of you may know, I have a literary themed last name, and it was always just connected to me. And it really wasn't until probably high school that I realized people didn't like reading. I had just always associated with friends who enjoyed reading, in high school opened that up to I guess other crowds, and I kind of didn't understand it. It was this weird world to me that didn't make sense. Reading was such a part of my daily activities, and it was such a hobby to me. I mean, of course I would read for pleasure. Why wouldn't anyone?
Yeah, it's strange. I guess you don't gain perspective until you get out into the wider world. But growing up, I read a lot more than I do now, sadly. But I just assumed that everybody in their spare time, in and among all their other hobbies, would pick up a book now and then and just read it for the sake of reading. But came to find out, especially as I got into the later years of high school, that most of my peers only read when they were forced to. And then when I got into the university level, sadly, that continued to be the case. They only read those passages in the text that were assigned. And reading for either out of academic curiosity or just for pleasure is not really something I would say that the majority of people do, sadly.
Dude, I am the exception out of the group. I think the first actual book that I read was Jurassic Park, and it was like 2 weeks before the movie came out, and I wanted to read it just because the movie was coming out, and that was the first book I think I read. Maybe that year I read a couple of other books, but they were mostly like true crime autobiographies, you know, stuff like that, biographies and stuff, and then didn't read again until like last year.
Wow. Yeah. So you had a big gap like I did.
But this year already, I've read 8 books.
So let me ask you this, Rick, because I know we've discussed this before. We both had big gaps in our lives where we weren't really reading very much for pleasure. I think the big challenge I had when I first started picking up books, you know, again, after a long time not doing so, was focus. Like, reading is an activity. It requires your attention. It requires a degree of concentration, and a lot of more passive entertainment maybe does not. You can't really zone out while you're reading. Otherwise, you'll get to the end of a chapter and realize, like, all you did was turn pages.
Exactly. That was my biggest problem. It was like, it wasn't instant gratification or instant satisfaction. And it would have to be super intense to keep me hooked. And then even still, if it was something I totally loved and wanted to read, I would still trail off like a mental patient, like, ooh, shiny.
The degree of concentration required for reading, I think, highlights one of the big differences between reading and, watching a movie or maybe even playing a video game. Your mind is engaged on so many levels. Like, you've got to pull in all the words and sort of make them into, you got to comprehend what you're reading, and then you've got to paint all these visual pictures as you're going, right? And when I'm reading, there are a lot of times when I'll be reading a passage that seems interesting, and I'll stop and I'll go back and I'll go over it again and again, because I don't think my mind has done it justice enough yet.
Exactly.
I think you inadvertently said it all at the beginning. You said reading is an activity.
Yeah.
Laying in front of the television, absorbing the flashing images isn't really as much of an activity.
You're right. It's being entertained as opposed to entertaining yourself, right?
Yeah.
So granted, there's still a degree of being entertained with the book, but you're not presented with a depiction of the author's like mind's eye view of things, right? Where in a movie, you know, here's what the filmmaker intended for you to see, hear, and to some extent feel. With the book, the author may very well have tried to pour as close a facsimile of his or her vision onto the page as possible, but there's still like your mind that has to grab it and your perception. I really wish there was a way to like stick cameras in people's brains and see how different your perception of a given written work is from the authors who originally wrote it.
Right. And that's another, like, you bring up that whole point of like, you kind of got to do it yourself. You know, you're creating it in your mind. I don't know if it's the activity thing that drove me away from it, because being a musician, I like playing music a lot better than I like listening to music. And when I'm playing music, I'm writing my own. So I am doing all the work. So it's like the exact opposite of why I didn't read or something. I don't know.
Well, it's doubly so though, Rick, because you're not just you are the author in that case as well. Like, you go a step beyond just being the reader. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. That's a good point.
Yeah, it wouldn't be any fair if you could play music and write amazing books. I mean, that's just cheating.
I guess it would be like listening to music would be one level. I mean, I'm not a musician, so call me on my BS if I'm totally off base. But listening to music would be akin to maybe, you know, consuming any other form of media. Playing someone else's music that they've wrote or crafted, so kind of putting your own spin on that, I think would be a bit more akin to reading in that it requires your mind's engagement.
Yes.
But of course, also the mastery of instruments. And then writing your own music has to be the most rewarding because you're like an author.
Yeah, good point. I guess I never really looked at it like that.
I'm glad that I was. Let's write that down and put it out for our audience to put it out on the digital page for our audience to interpret as they will. So that said, I know this is true for me, Rick, and Brian is a kind of a consistent lifelong reader. Maybe you guys can both back me up on this. Have you found that reading has shaped you as a person? Like, after you've read a few books in a row, do you find that your outlook on the world sort of changes somewhat, or at least you have like another lens to look through, to look at things through?
Absolutely. For me, a good author, I think really has something to say and really knows how to say it, like a belief, and he can teach you how to see, not necessarily his point of view, but he can teach you how to see someone else's point of view. And the more points of view you're adept at, it's expansive. Your mind is just bigger than it used to be. And I think you understand more of the world. I think you understand more of the complexities of the world.
And maybe even some of your own perceptions are echoed back or are given a little more credence because there's some overlap between your view and the author's, perhaps.
I used to get into arguments all the time about how opinionated I am. I'm pretty opinionated, but one of the reasons I'm opinionated is because I fucking think about it before I have an opinion.
Yes, yes.
So reading a book that doesn't agree with you, you really have to examine why you believe what you do. And if you walk away from the book still believing what you believe instead of what he wanted you to believe or what he, you know, would have had you believe, you've at least examined that and you at least have, I think, more of an understanding of why you believe it.
Do you concur, Rick? Do you feel that there's a mind expanding and or altering sort of property or not property, but effect that comes with reading?
I don't think I've read the right stuff or enough stuff to have it affect me that way. But what I have read does have a long lasting effect on me. And it's funny because I was actually just thinking about this today. It's no secret. I read on my phone on the toilet. It is what it is, man. That's my fucking reading time. So be it. At least I found some time to read, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I got to a point when I was reading this book called Down and Out in the Magic Kingdom, and it's like a sci-fi book and ties in with Disney and stuff. I'm sure we'll talk about it again later. I've talked about it on other shows. But I don't know why I'm even telling anybody this. But during that time, there was, you know, there's an air freshener in the bathroom, right? Because it's a bathroom. It needs an air freshener. Well, apparently they had changed air fresheners since I read that book, and I never really noticed it until today because I walked into the bathroom, and the minute I walked in, I got a whiff of the air freshener, and instantly this picture was painted in my head of – I'm sorry. It wasn't Down and Out in Magic Kingdom. It was Ready Player One.
Mm, yes.
So I instantly got this like life experience flashed in front of my eyes, all triggered from that smell. But it wasn't even my life experience. It was the story that I read in that book, Ready Player One. And I was
like, isn't
that
awesome?
I was like, yes. What the fuck? Like it, I stood there for a second and it like, I mean, it affected me. It hit me like, wait a minute. Like, I was literally confused. I could see this trailer park and haptic machines and all this stuff. And I'm like, wait a minute, but that didn't happen to me. But why do I remember this? And I'm like, holy shit, that was a fucking book I read.
Ah, that's great.
And it was so much deeper and so much more intense than any movie I have ever seen. So in that case, it has had an effect on me.
That's cool. And I mean, I think about it. That's because through numerous trips to that particular reading alcove, you were experiencing like a journey, a portion of your life that wasn't real, but it kind of was as far as your mind was concerned, right?
Right. And I mean, not only is that a testament to how much it affected me, but also how much I've grown in my ability through the practice of reading that I'm able to focus that intently when in the past I couldn't even get past a sentence, let alone a paragraph, let alone a page, let alone a chapter, let alone multiple books.
Yeah. Yeah. It's your mind can be trained to read again. So,
and it was cool to know, like, you know, for those times that I was in that quote unquote reading alcove, I was locked away in that Ready Player One world. And I don't think I realized how deeply I was in that world until today when this happened. It was awesome.
That's killer to hear, man.
Yeah, agreed. I mean, it's funny that you mentioned Ready Player One. Ready Player One proposes a world wherein you are like drawn mentally, if not bodily, into this alternate world. But that book accomplished the same thing with you. That's
right.
Great. Cool. So Rick's amazing journey from one of the most vile places in human existence, the toilet, into a fantastic dream world of magic. It's great. Let's talk about a sort of staple of nerdy reading, which bridges sort of the gap between passive media and the written word, I think, which doesn't really get its due just because of its, I think it's had its origins in like the back page of newspapers. I'm talking about comics. I think comics, they give you a visual, they give you some pretty compelling visuals to accompany the written words, but they still, there's a lot going on between those panels and also a lot, maybe not written, not written out for you that is left for your mind to fill in. So basically two questions out of that. One, do you think comics deserve a more elevated position in the popular imagination? And two, as a nerd, can you even call yourself a nerd if you don't read at least some comics or manga or graphic novels or what have you?
I think they absolutely deserve to be right alongside like actual books. Once upon a time, they were silly little parables about, you know, saving dogs and being a good Boy Scout and all that kind of stuff. The stuff they've done in the last 20 years, there are just some brilliant storylines out there. And there are storylines that people die. And some people do really die in comic books. I know they always, you know, oh, he'll be back. But no, some comic books deal with consequences of life and death. And what you can get away with in a comic, what people can be introduced to, I think it's a little more out there and it can be a little bit more, I don't want to say edgy, but I want to say like forward thinking. You can tell a story that hasn't been told.
Mm. So you could be more, what's the word I'm looking for? Yeah. You can be more off the wall with the story you're telling, because you also have the accompanying visuals to drive home the off the wallness.
I think it's not even the visuals. I think it's just the market. You know, they'll let you get away with it. But as long as, you know, Wolverine and Cable do it, a billion people are going to read the shit instead of like some 99-cent used book that maybe 10,000 people are going to read.
So comics are they're more accessible. They're still, I think, in the overall. Well, I might be wrong. This is me just shooting from the hip. They're still kind of a niche, but they're a much larger niche than just books.
And I mean, you also have to look at, like Brian said, that he thinks that they should be elevated just simply because how much they've changed, even in just like the last 20 years. Well, just think about the last 10 years, how much stuff has changed. How many movies, how much mainstream media are we seeing that's generated from a comic book or comic book like things that are coming out as brand new. And some of these storylines are forever, decades ago that they were written, but only now is it acceptable and palatable.
Yeah, and I'm glad you mentioned that, because I think it says a lot for where comics and or graphic novels are, that you've got people comparing these blockbuster Hollywood movies and saying it's not as good as the book, but they're not talking about, you know, a printed page book. They're talking about a comic, like, oh, the comic was better.
Right.
Like, I never thought I'd see a day when you'd have Hollywood blockbusters that didn't live up to the comic. Like,
but I think that plays into exactly what Brian was just saying, where you have the ability on those pages to get away with a hell of a lot more than you would on a movie screen or a television screen and stuff like that.
Yeah, there's more. The conventions are a lot looser. I actually agree now that I think about it. Especially some of the comics I've read are just, they would be considered off the wall. But they will. But in 10 or 20 years, they will make for, like, appropriate fodder for the movies when, like, the mainstream has moved along, I suspect. So I think it probably goes without saying, but just a final yes or no on that. So comic books required reading for any self-respecting nerd, yes or no?
I'm going to have to say no, because I...
Oh, my.
I have never been able to even read comics. That's how little reading ability I was able. I couldn't even focus on comics. I couldn't even get through a fucking comic book. But do I want to say it falls into the stereotype perfectly? Yes. But, you know, okay, I wasn't able to read. Maybe I wasn't really able to get through sci-fi books, or I wasn't able to get through comic books or whatever, but I'd read the shit out of an Omni magazine article.
Well, if that can hold your attention, and especially given that you are a newly minted reader, Rick, I think you should give comics a second look. I think there's a lot, and Brian and I can recommend no end of them and loan you them. And I think you would, you'd get a lot out of them.
Number one, it didn't stop me from collecting, because I'm an illustrator by trade. That's what I do for my day job. So I've always appreciated the artwork, and I've still collected regardless. But since my ability to read books has come to fruition, I guess, I've been going back and I've read a bunch of my comics and still picking up new ones and stuff like that. So current day Rick would say, yes, every nerd should be a comic book reader.
Right. Yes.
But that's how badly I wanted to wear my nerd-like bona fides on my sleeve that I would still collect even though I wasn't reading, just because I felt like it was part of my nerdistic duty.
Nice, nerdistic.
To do
duty.
So.
That's great.
But I will say, dude, another thing, and if there's any comic book people listening, make it easier for somebody who's new to comics to walk into a comic line and not be confused as to what to read, who to read, where to read. It's like these stories branch off in so many zillions of places. It was so frustrating to try to find something that didn't lead me to a dead end and a cliffhanger, or lead me to read another book that I had absolutely no interest in. So once I found graphic novels, I kind of cured that a little bit. But even still today, if I want to pick up something new, I still find it insanely confusing.
Yeah, there's some crazy crisscrossing storylines and branching. I just went to a comic book store today to pick up a few books, and I was talking to the guy about that, like how lamentable it is that I just don't have the time, money, or patience to chase every one of these little side stories down. So Brian, you're a definite thumbs up on the self-respecting nerd does read comics.
Yeah, I think you have to be involved in some capacity. Comic books are almost responsible for nerd stereotypes.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the comic book guy from The Simpsons is
positive nerd stereotypes.
I mean, I hate to say it, but I encounter that guy and I might resemble him in many ways. So
say one thing, though, because this just drives me nuts. If you encounter him, don't fucking shop there. There are other places. They don't all treat you like that. I hate that.
Well, I don't like that guy's pretentious, like,
haughty. It is a very rare Mary Worth.
Yes. I don't like that sort of holier-than-thou attitude, but his fashion sense and so on, that's pretty dead on. And that hasn't changed since the 80s, I have to confess.
Probably hasn't changed since the 70s.
Yeah, you're probably right. Okay, so come for the books, don't stay for the attitude. Comics are on our must-read genres list, I guess. Which brings us to another one. I guess then you've got your two written word staples, obviously, right? Those being sci-fi and fantasy. Typically, well, I won't say typically. I like both, but I know a lot of folks that they're either pure sci-fi people or they're pure fantasy people, and they seldom cross the line. I don't get those people, but they do exist. Do you guys fall down on either of those being a required genre? Do you fall down one way or another on that, and do you have a preference?
I'm still too new to reading, so I think for me, I'm a little more safe and comfortable in the sci-fi realm of things.
Okay.
I prefer for myself fantasy, but I don't see how anyone isn't familiar with sci-fi. Sci-fi is so huge to just everything, man. Like television, movies, books, comics. Sci-fi is just everywhere. Good sci-fi too.
It seems that way, but I still wonder about comparative markets. Like, how many more people are football fans than are fans of Star Trek? Even though Star Trek, by any measure, is huge. You know, I'm not saying there's not overlap, but like in my mind, like football and shows like Grey's Anatomy and Breaking Bad and like those type of, like, I don't know what to call, they're still fiction, but they're like acceptable fiction, still dwarf these sort of niche genres. I don't know. That might just be my perception, and I might be way off base now.
I know what you're saying. It's like, even in the circles we run in, where it's completely all about sci-fi and fantasy and stuff like that, it still feels small.
Yeah.
In comparison. I agree. But like Brian said, it's like you almost can't even turn on the TV any time during the week and find some type of drama show that's on. And lo and behold, 5 minutes in, you're like, holy shit, this is nothing but masked sci-fi.
I think it's the masking that I don't really appreciate. Right. It's like stealth delivery. Like, yeah. People are watching these shows, not realizing, For example,
the same person that's going to watch The Dome on ABC is the same fucking jock asshole who's going to make fun of you for fucking liking Star Wars. They're like, dude, you were just watching sci-fi last night. You don't even know it.
Right. And he was the one a few years ago that was watching Heroes when that show was popular.
Exactly.
You're watching a show about comics. You realize that, right? No way, man. No.
Kick your fucking ass.
Exactly.
Your fucking mouth.
I love how it always comes back to these assholes that picked on us in high school.
I know, right? Another stereotype. Actually, I'm going to just clear the air on this right now, and Brian can attest, I was actually a bully in high school, so you know, I don't fit the nerd stereotype.
Probably because that's how we met. He used to pick on me.
Yeah.
Well, Tom's like 7.5 feet tall, so...
I was getting ready to, you know, beat Brian up, and then he held up this Dragonlance book to protect himself, and the cover looked really cool, and I was like, what's this stupid shit?
Wait, is this a true story?
No,
because I'm like, I don't know, Brian's a pretty big guy, too. I really don't see anybody picking on him.
We are both blessed with large size, so we weren't really this, I won't say we weren't the subject of some picking on, but yeah, they're... Well, we went to one school. It was bad. But.
I met one of my best friends from a situation like that. I had this Devo shirt that I used to wear to school all the time. And this one kid who just looked like some kind of surfer preppy kid, he just would always make a comment. And I was always like, you know, run into my car or whatever. Just kind of blew it off. And one day he's like, nice shirt, man. And apparently that's what he had been saying the whole time. And I was like, well, you got a fucking problem with Devo? Like, I was ready to throw it out. And he's like, no, dude, I love them. I'm like, well, fucking mock me. And then he holds up his notebook, and there was a Devo sticker on it. And, you know, we've been friends ever since.
That's awesome.
And that was in, like, 1984.
I wish the story I was joking about was true. I wish like Brian and I had met over like a melee where fantasy books were used as shields or something. But that didn't really happen ever.
I figured it was appropriate because, you know, Devo love is nerd love, so it's all good.
I agree with that statement wholeheartedly, actually. That's Devo is to me what reading is to you. I came to it late, and although I won't claim that you owe your love of reading to me, I do owe my love of Devo to you, sir.
That means a lot to me, man. Not going to lie. I feel like I've spent my whole life trying to spread the love and knowledge of de-evolution. And to know that you've joined the de-evolutionary army and become a devotee and a dirty evil spud because of me makes me proud.
Oh, God, this is a heartwarming. This is a much more heartwarming episode than I ever thought it would be.
Isn't it?
It really is.
Speaking of, is that true? Was that like the official initiation ritual? Because that was so poetic.
Oh, that was well. Yeah, that was very well put, Rick, by the way. Yeah.
That had like meter and rhyme, Rick.
Yeah, that just came from the heart, man.
Yeah. A true poet doesn't think, he just feels onto the page. Or in this case, into the ears of our listeners. And Rick just felt all up in your ears, listeners. Let's see. A couple other areas where a typical nerd might be turning pages are... Well, I shouldn't say that. Consuming the written word is the better way to put it. One is in the consumption and the poring over of game rulebooks, specifically pen and paper rulebooks, tabletop miniatures rulebooks. And I know for a fact, because we all have the 9,000-page giant Star Wars book, that this applies to all three of us. I think there's a lot to be said for digesting and comprehending the pretty complex rules of a pen and paper role-playing game. And also a lot of the tabletop games it's a lot to digest and to really synthesize and master. So I think there's a lot to be said for your intellectual well-being when it comes to reading books of that sort.
That stuff was intimidating the first time you sat down to play Dungeons and Dragons or Vampire or whatever. You really had to study it before you were ready.
Yeah. I give credit to Dungeons and Dragons for getting me to understand a lot of principles of like math, probability, and like a lot of like words that I would never really use in a sentence. So there was a lot of extracurricular education that went on thanks to role-playing games. Specifically for me, Dungeons and Dragons, classic all the way up through second edition, which I was immersed in during my adolescence, I guess, into teenage and early adulthood.
Never had a problem with comeliness versus homeliness because of that.
Wow, I just made the connection of those being like perfect antonyms. Comeliness, homeliness. Yeah.
Homeliness was a subset of charisma for like the second edition or first edition or something that.
You're right. Okay.
I just remember that forever now. I don't know why.
We should use the word comely more. I think it's nice. Hey, you're pretty comely. Let me get your number. What'd you just say? Never mind.
Kick your ass, faggot.
But I'm not. I'm clearly not, because I expressed interest in you, a girl. Still kick your ass. Okay. Rick, what about you? I shouldn't say that. I don't want to speak for your gaming history, but I know you've playing games with us. You've been delving into many a game rules tome lately. What are your feelings on those?
The Star Wars one has got me hooked. Like, I actually like to sit down and read/research.
Okay. So there's a pleasure in just the actual learning of the rules.
Yeah, and it's not even fluff stuff. It's more character growth, learning. It's weird. In that particular Star Wars book, I feel like I can read about things, and I'm getting history, but it's not fluff, and I'm getting knowledge, but it's not technical manual. I don't know
it's
if they're
world building.
Yeah, it's kind of like, yeah, it's almost like I'm reading a little bit of, I don't know, I guess maybe it's because to me, my character is completely alive and he is a real person who I know and all this other stuff. So I want to learn as much as I can to help him. I don't know. I don't know what the fascination is, but like, I mean, we've played War Machine and Malifaux, and there's tons of books that Kimberly's bought, and they're full of fluff stories and all this other stuff, and I've never bothered to crack open a page unless I was checking a rule. This Star Wars one, and I think it's, like I said, just because I'm so invested in my character, like, I want to know. And the way this book, as confusing as it is laid out, I like the way it's written, in the way, like I said, I can get technical information without it being like I'm reading a technical manual, and I'm getting fluff without it being a story. So it's, I find my interest and obsession with this book extremely odd, but I like it.
Ah, cool. It's sort of turn you on two levels. So yeah, that's great. That's fantastic. I guess that brings me to sort of the other side of the gaming coin, video games. Now, I don't think most people today would associate video games with very much reading, but there was a time, specifically probably the 80s and 90s, when fans of video game role-playing games in particular did a lot of reading. All the dialogue, all the instructions, all the tutorials, all the story was all up, presented on the screen for you to read, to say nothing of like various like, you know, pieces of lore you could discover along the way. Thinking back, especially to like the Final Fantasy series, and this is before the voice acting sort of took a lot of this out of the, sort of knocked this out as a factor. We did a lot of reading. I know Brian will concur. Rick, I don't know how much of a quote unquote reading game person you were back in the day, but it was
zero. It was,
okay. Okay.
Because it was way too much reading. I found my time better spent playing X-Wing versus TIE Fighter or Echo the Dolphin and Earthworm Jim, where I didn't have to read a word.
Those are good games, actually. I'm not taking away from non-reading games, but
yeah, and I'm not knocking them either. I couldn't do it. As much as some of those games interested me, I would love to watch other people, but I'd make them tell me what was happening because I didn't want to read.
I think Brian and I could both share this story. I'll share it from my perspective. We had been fans of Final Fantasy, the Final Fantasy series of games and other role-playing games for some time. And I was in the military when Final Fantasy VII came out. And they were advertising the hell out of Final Fantasy VII, like on MTV and stuff. They were like showing like, and they were showing basically all these really cool CG, like cinematic scenes where these monsters would come out, all these fantastic things. That's basically they were showing what they were showing off. They weren't really showing off much gameplay, and they definitely weren't showing off any of the multiple panels of dialogue that you'd have to parse
45 minute red intro.
Yes.
If I want to read, I'm going to go to school.
Well, my friends are all like, dude, I'm going to get this game. And I'm like raving about it. I'm like, oh, you should. It's so good. Like, guys were buying a PlayStation to play that game. And me being like a total geek, I'm like, yeah, you definitely should. And some people were coming back and they were like, this is awesome. This is the best thing ever. I didn't know video games could be this cool. But for every one of them, there were like three or four other guys who were like, huh, yeah, that Fantasy VII game, it's not like what I thought it would be. Like, it's like a lot of reading. In other words, it was a reading game, as I'm sure Brian knows. You've got a story specifically about the phrase reading game, don't you, Brian?
I had the fortune or misfortune, depending on what side of the bed you wake up, of working in the video game retail industry during that time. PlayStation 1 was pretty big. It was a much more popular system than anything I had seen before, and it was very widespread. The audience, not at all people that like had ever played games. And not only did I constantly get asked for Final Fantasy Vi, I'll let that one sink in. But it Final Fantasy Vi was constantly returned because people were like, what the fuck? I got to read?
It's a reading game.
Yeah.
I did have one guy
come in and he returned Final Fantasy and he checked out something else. I think it was a Resident Evil game. I think it was Resident Evil 2. He's like, this ain't a reading game too, is it? No, dude, you don't have to read a whole lot in that one. Just shoot shit.
This ain't some kind of reading game, is it?
Perfect. Oh, man, reading games.
But such is the power of advertising that you don't actually need to know anything about the game you're going to play to buy it. Just buy it because it's pretty.
Those mind-blowing graphics were enough to sell people, but I don't think they were able to reproduce that with any subsequent Final Fantasy games. Oh, Final Fantasy VI, huh? Think again. You're not going to fool me. What's this? Final Fantasy X? No way. I ain't reading. But I think with Final Fantasy X, or whatever we're up to now, you don't really... No, it's Xiv now, isn't it?
Xiv just came out.
There's still too much reading. Xiv, so sorry. Sorry, reading game guy.
Shit, I had a hard time reading quests in World of Warcraft.
The good news is you didn't have to. I'll confess, like, by the time I was into World of Warcraft, I was kind of fatigued on the whole MMORPG thing. I would just, like, blow through stuff. Like, I don't really care why I'm killing these antelope with the glowing eyes. I'm just going to go kill them.
Right. It's not a matter of why, it's just how many.
Right. 20? You got it.
I'll be right back.
You almost wish like there was a way to just tell the guy to zip his lip mid-dialogue. I need help. Shh. Just give me the numbers and mark it on my map. I'll be back.
That was now, one of the first mods I used for Warcraft. If you remember when the game first came out, the words would appear slowly on your scroll and that little like scratching noise like they were writing.
Yes, yes, yes.
And the first mod I got was just like, nope, put it all up at once. Like it would just slap it on screen.
Look, just give me the coordinates and email me the details. I'll read them after the quest.
Yet I find myself unhealthily addicted to Animal Crossing, where not only do I have the choice of reading or listening, but all I really am listening to is...
Oh, gosh. Rick, Animal Crossing, its dialogue delivery with accompanying like blah 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 sounds was a staple of RPGs and really a lot of games during like the 8 and 16 bit era, where people's voices were just like
only game I could read, and I know what you're talking about, was on Bionic Commando. It did that. It
the had original.
Yeah.
So you're familiar with the concept.
Yes.
I hate to say it, I've gotten a little bit spoiled by like the lesser amount of reading required today. Animal Crossing, the reading's a little ponderous. I really don't want to be given like a 4-paragraph spiel about like, you know, how I can improve my home, because I've done it 20 times. I know now. I don't need you to tell me again.
Case so there you point. Go. There's a sampling.
Perfect. Okay, so sort of a mixed bag on reading games and video games as a delivery system for the written word. I'm okay. I'm still in favor of it. I've been playing, like, I still play some classic JRPGs that require a lot of reading, and I don't mind it. Voice acting enhances it and makes it a little more enjoyable. I don't think it's a replacement, in my opinion, as a purist.
I think voice acting hurts it. I liked being sucked in like that. I like having to give my own voices and have my own emotions behind the inflections. And
I'm with you, Brian, on that. Like, that was my big complaint when they first put voices in, or when we started seeing them, especially in RPGs. But recently, the game Ni No Kuni for the PS3 kind of changed my mind. The voice acting is so good and so fits the characters that I want to be on their side enough to let them be characters that somebody else imagined. But if you're talking an RPG where I create the characters and I customize them, how rare are those? Yeah, I agree. It should be my voice that they have. So now to round things out, I guess I want to do a comparison between sort of the written word the comic book, et cetera, versus more mainstream entertainment, more mainstream media, television, movies, et cetera. It seems like I'm sure that reading declined when other forms of media came to the fore, or maybe people just didn't read ever. But the fact remains that books, as a delivery method of ideas, still seem to be kind of the Wild West. You can do any, you can put anything down on a page. You may not be commercially successful with it. There's still a, you know, the publishing barrier to entry as far as putting it out there for the market, though I guess with digital distribution that's falling. But I think writing still represents the best chance for the dissemination of new ideas, whereas you're not really going to see some experimental movie put out for a national or international release. Do you guys agree?
I do.
Yeah, I think so. Even the stuff that's not hugely successful that becomes movies is books and short stories and in a compilation or wins a Hugo Award, which means no one reads it, but it's great first.
So the masses might not be exposed to these great ideas or these great works of fiction or what have you until they are adapted to movies. But the initial kernel, the idea, is still planted by authors, by writers.
Often.
If you dig deep enough, you're going to find something that's breaking the barriers, that's new, that's experimental. In writing, just like you will in music, just like you will, but far less production values in some type of movies and stuff like that. So it's out there, but it seems like you can go ahead and write a book all well knowing that there's probably not going to be any commercial success and it can still get published, which you don't seem to have that type of freedom, artistic freedom of acceptance in other mediums. To me, yeah, that's how it feels.
The scale of success, too, is just so hugely different.
Right.
Like 10,000 books sell and you make $500,000 and it's unheard of success. Whereas if a movie made $500,000, people would jump out of windows.
I think with films and television, it's such a high stakes game. So much work goes into producing a movie or a television series that it's a huge gamble. And so you've got to follow a certain formula. You're locked in just by virtue of how you're delivering the content. You know, probably during the early days of TV, when they were just throwing anything at the wall to see if it stuck, there was a lot more freedom and creativity.
Hell yes, there was.
I was hoping that the internet might usher in a similar era when it came to, you know, audiovisual entertainment. And, you know, we did our episode on web content, so I don't want to crap on internet delivered content, but I think it still held to the shine and polish standard that television is. So if you're filming with kind of a shaky camera and not great, as you said, production values, a lot of the merit that's in your story, that's in the way you did things, is probably just kind of washed out.
Yeah, and it's sad to see how fast that has taken place, because maybe 10 years ago that wasn't the case. What you could get away with 10 years ago on the internet, you can't now successfully.
Right, right. Whereas you still hear to this day of like fan fiction being adapted into successful franchises,
right,
and stuff, you know, when it comes to the written word. So with that said, let's round things out with the final question of tonight's episode. Is the book always going to be better when it comes right down to it?
I think because of the personal involvement, it will be. It will always be a better experience for the reader because the reader's creating half of it. You're never going to be able to have that custom tailored movie. No one's going to spend $5 million making a movie just for you to enjoy.
I'm with Brian. Your interpretation is always going to be better. Not to mention that they always change the fucking movie.
Yes, yes. Yes, they do for reasons that I still don't understand entirely.
They have to appeal to the lowest common denominator. Sadly, that's just, they have to make sure everyone understands what happens. They have to make sure no one goes home sad. They have to make sure when no one thinks too fucking much.
All you goddamn 640 by 480ers out there.
Wow, I like that. You're this, the average moviegoer is the 640 by 480 consumer. You've got to appeal to them. Wow, I never really thought about it like that. That's perfect. I think that it goes back to the movie being like a formula for making money. And yeah, you've got to change things around so that every slackjaw paying for his ticket will go and tell the other slackjaws that it's good and you should go pay for your ticket too.
Tom, you read Starship Troopers, right?
I did, yes.
Will you ever view the movie the same again?
I'll view the movie as an entertaining movie. I like the movie, but it's got absolutely nothing to do with the book. Nothing, nothing, nothing. Except that there's like space bugs. That's where the similarities end. No, I can never... That should have been called like Space Bug Hunters or something.
It is as similar to Men in Black as it is the fucking book.
Yes, I mean, that's no stretch to say that. Yes, it's got more in common with Men in Black, actually. And I like the movie. I saw the movie way before I ever read the book. And they're not related at all. And I don't know why somebody decided to do that. Like, that doesn't make any sense.
Would the book as a movie have been successful?
No. No,
that's
gosh.
Why someone did it.
It was essentially a species of Full Metal Jacket in space, is the way, if I had to nutshell the movie, you know what I mean? It was more about the perspective of somebody like going through... correct me if I'm wrong, but based on my recollection, it's the perspective of somebody in a military unit in the future against this backdrop of this, this war against these creatures. It's not an action movie about going down to planets and kicking ass. Right? Is that a fair characterization, Brian?
Yeah, it is. It's about... Ah, Jesus, you've all seen the movie, I'm sure. Johnny Rico joins a squad and becomes the only leader available because everyone else screws up and because he's such a natural badass and because he's so handsome and rugged. And the book, he fucking kills people. He loses people. He knows he's going to lose people. It's a huge weight on his soul to send people to their fucking death because it means the survival of the survival of the race. It's about responsibility, and it's about like what he has to be willing to do. It's completely different.
It would be like, so do you think I'm wrong in saying that if they had made a more faithful adaptation, it would be like, it would have the gravity of like Full Metal Jacket. It would be more like that than like a sci-fi popcorn movie.
I would say Saving Private Ryan.
Actually, yeah, you might. Yeah, yeah, it might have that level.
But
of
that was
that
was a huge success.
Starship Troopers?
No. Saving Private Ryan.
Yeah, so the audience can... People are not unwilling to digest a serious story. I guess maybe when they go to sci-fi, they want, like, just, like, pew-pew, kill the aliens. They don't want, like, somebody making painful life and death decisions.
We'll see soon with Ender's Game.
Ooh. Yeah, we might defer this will the book always be better question until we see the... I don't want to be negative until we see the creative outcome. License. Yeah. The outcome of the Ender's Game film adaptation. But before that final deciding film, I will say that the book, I'm going to agree with you guys. The book's always going to be better because you've got two interested parties. One, the reader consuming it and trying to suck every little bit of imagery and meaning out of it as they choose to. And two, the author, not constrained by a 2-hour time limit, not constrained by, you know, some board
budget.
Of censors or whatever. Yeah, or budget, right, what have you. Just their budget and time and effort, really. Really trying to paint as nuanced a picture as possible. Like, even in conversation falls short, but with the written word, it's as close as you can get to one human trying to just pour their mind into someone else's head, mm-hmm. and another human trying to make their mind the receptacle to catch it all. And I don't think, no matter how much 3D and like shaky theater seats and virtual reality or whatever we make up is developed, we're never going to be able to best that through the audiovisual experience. And that's my 3-second soapbox, semi-coherent rant on that topic. Anything else before we adjourn, guys?
Read Heinlein. You owe it to yourself.
Actually, I couldn't agree more. And if for those of you that don't know, the book we were going on about at length is a work of Heinlein. Somewhat controversial author, no, Brian? Or kind of liked or despised?
Controversial, I'd say. I guess he's love-hate.
Yeah. I'm in the love category, at least so far. But I encourage listeners to the show to find out for themselves.
And I'll throw out there, if you are desperately wanting to become a reader, there's a really good book that all of us on the cast have read. And coming from a noob reader, this book really got me hungry to read more. And it was Ready Player One. If you're into video games, 80s era, anything.
If you're into the show.
Yes. I mean, it is without a doubt one of the coolest, most entertaining things I've ever experienced, and really fed my appetite and got me hungry for more reading. So that's my noob recommendation for reading, Ready Player One.
I second Rick's recommendation, and like eighth grade Tom will also tell you to read the Dragonlance Chronicles series of books. There are three of them, and there's a whole bunch of other series that spawned off from that. If you want some very accessible, but I think fairly well written, at least eighth grade Tom thought it was well written, fantasy set in a D&D-like setting, can't go wrong.
One of the few series I actually go back and read still.
There you go. And Brian is like the ultimate reader in our group, so that should be all you need to hear. Tell you what else you can hear, though. If you're interested in listening to this podcast, you can hear it every week by subscribing to it on iTunes. And once there, instead of just try your hand at authorship, if that's the right word, by writing us a favorable review and giving us a favorable rating.
And if you don't like the iTunes, you can head on over to www.nerdstravaganza.com, where you can download the show, rate the show, stream the show, leave us a comment, send us an email, all kinds of cool stuff.
And join our cool fan pages, no matter what social media venue you use, Google+, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, it's all under Nerdstravaganza.
And if you're finding yourself inclined to stream our podcast, don't shy away from the excellent Stitcher.
The latest and greatest, Stitcher.
Stitcher, better than the movie. Also look for the Nerdstravaganza series of novels coming to bookstores near you.
And join our cool fan pages, no matter what media you, what the hell is a social media venue called?
A social media venue. Also look for the Nerdstravaganza series of novels coming to bookstores near you.
No, they're novellas, actually.
They're, nerd-war.
They're nerd-war, nerd-vellas.
Come on, Brian. You gotta add to this.
The only thing I think of when I hear novellas anymore is telenovelas, the Spanish opera, Spanish soap operas. You guys totally got me off track.
Nice.
La Nerganza.
Vámonos.
La Pasión.
La Pasión de la Ganza.
I like that.
Thanks. Ganza probably actually means something totally inappropriate in Spanish for all I know, but whatever.
Hey, at least if they complain, we know they're listening.
Exactly.
My character's name in that would be Tomas, which has a much cooler ring, I think. So I'm Tomas, here of, what do they call it? La Pasión de la Ganza?
Totally making a soap opera out of that.
You're already
telenovela. Novella, thank you.
And you're Ricardo, and Brian, I don't... How do you...
Brion.
Are you Brion? Nice. Awesome. All right, we got our next project underway. So a little hiatus from the Nerdstravaganza podcast while we make our telenovela. Adios! Telen-